Completely Conspicuous, Episode 351, November 11th, 2014. Welcome back to Completely Conspicuous. I'm your host, Jake Umar. This week, it's part two of my conversation with guest Rick Doobie as we explore the strange career of Leo Sayer. We've also got music from Menace Beach, The OCs, and The Fresh and Onlys. As always, please send any comments, questions, or Led Zeppelin reunion concert tickets to j.umar@gmail.com. Also, please check out Completely Conspicuous at comcon.cast.blogspot.com and on Facebook. And you can follow me on Twitter at coomdog. You can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. Now here's Menace Beach with Fortune Teller.
We'll be right back.
And now, back to my conversation with Rick Doobie.
Now, this was huge.
Oh, yeah.
Now, here's where the hits really start pouring in. Now, what was the charting on this? We've got to look up some chart positions here.
This is 1977, so this is 3 years after Long Tall Glasses that heard. So, in that time, the record industry changed considerably. Yeah, this hit number one in the U.S.
Yeah, let's see. He did have two singles before this one, but I don't know either of them, so I just skipped.
Oh, Moonlighting and
Giving It All Away.
Well, we did Giving It All Away, didn't we?
No.
Yeah, that was the Daltrey song.
Oh, that's right, we did. But did he chart with that?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
And now it's all falsetto. So, you see, he's also, he's mimicking.
He's trying to get away from the Elton John thing, right?
He's like,
but mimicking what, though? Is it mimicking or is this his style?
I mean, it's mimicking disco singers, basically, right? I mean, almost female singers as opposed to male. Hmm. I mean, it's almost like a KC and the Sunshine Band thing.
Wow, that's higher. That's a big statement.
But higher. Well, I mean, I think that was probably his inspiration.
Huh.
But these guys are making it big.
Interesting.
Not knowing the man himself, I wouldn't know.
He had a couple of BBC specials. We should track those down and see if we can have a look at them. I bet those are on the internet for watching. So his first U.S. single was Long Tall Glasses. It peaked at number 9.
A one-man band made it to 96 in the U.S.
This book is only top 40. 40.
Yeah.
Yeah.
According to the Wikipedia.
Yeah, this is a... This You Make Me Feel Like Dancing was a number 1 for 1 week.
Yeah.
But it was a platinum single. Oh, maybe no. It was only gold, but it was on the chart for 17 weeks. Woo! Yeah, he was a. Oh my goodness! Yeah,
that year.
Yeah, he had a run. He started. He had a song on the charts solidly, nonstop. From November of 76 all the way through to February of 78, he always had something on the charts.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he had this, then When I Need You, How Much Love.
Yep.
Made to 17 in the U.S.
Yep.
Thunder in My Heart.
Yep.
Easy to Love.
Yep.
And then There Isn't Anything Which Didn't Chart.
He had a short break before he had More Than I Can Say.
Dancing the Night Away. Yeah, More Than I Can Say was like 1980.
Yeah, he had a year and a half off there.
But he was releasing songs in 78.
That must have been really disappointing to him because More Than I Can Say was a huge hit.
Yeah.
So he must have thought, I am back.
Number 2 in the U.S.
And then he
released 3 singles that didn't even chart.
Man.
And then he had a hit in 81 with Living in a Fantasy, which I don't remember right now, but I probably will when I hear it again. But that hit 23 in the U.S.
Living in a Fantasy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he never charted again.
Never charted
in the U.S.
again.
He had a few in England, but...
Never charted
never.
Again.
He had like the song Have You Ever Been in Love, which hit number 10 in the U.K. in 82. Won the... Ivor Novello Award for Best Song Musically and Lyrically, but
well,
didn't...
I mean, I got one of those.
Sure. Quattro Formaggi, right? and this is like classic 70s wuss rock.
Yeah, this sucks.
Yeah.
You know what's funny is there's a certain... What year is this?
77.
Oh, that's funny.
Number one.
There's a certain crop of songs that... is goofy. It doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with the style of the song. case in point this one, that I associate with, believe it or not, skateboarding. Because, because I used to go to the skate park.
And play this?
Yeah, because I grew up in New Hampshire where people are just fucking insane. Where just people operate at a lower mental speed. And I don't know what radio station. They probably just played the radio station that they
were
able
to get. Whatever the top 40 station. Yeah.
You know? And so, like, I'd skateboard, and they'd play, like, songs like this. I'd be skateboarding, and this would be what was playing in the skate park.
I mean, this definitely played at, like, you know, roller rinks and stuff. Like, you know, when I'd go to, like, you know, those kind of, like, school or things with, you know, other kids, like, in fourth, fifth grade, you know, and ice skating rinks, you know, where you do, like, you skate with, like, you know, other kids and stuff, and they'd play this, and then, like, you know, the boyfriends and girlfriends would, you know, did skate together or whatever, for crap like this.
Well, I think it's why I'm so charmed by, like, stuff that's a little before my time, stoner nostalgia. Like, I love, like, you know, like, you listen to these when you listen to, like, Fu Manchu records from 10 or 12 years ago, and they hearken to a time that
skating
is
in pools.
When I was skateboarding and hearing Leo Sayer records, I can ignore that and imagine it was music like that. Or
Evil Eye instead of this.
Yes. Or now when you and I, we get together sometimes and we'll watch these drive-in movies from, like, 1974 where, you know, teenagers were riding around in customized vans.
You know,
smoking weed and, you know,
pushy vans.
Yeah, pushing girls out of the back of them or whatever, you know. And, and for me, I was listening to Leo Sayer.
Yeah. I was too.
So I think that's why I like stuff like that. It's like a little bit of, like, revisionist history.
Sure. But yeah, like, you know, you listen to him on this, and, like, any kind of, like, edge he had on those early songs where he was kind of doing, like, a Rod Stewart or even an Elton John, like, now it's just kind of doing this, like, you know, wussy lover man, you know, Billy Joel, you know, not even Billy Joel, but, like...
Well, it just really calls attention to, you know, pop music is a business.
Yeah.
You know, it's no different then than it is now. I mean, now it's easy to be cynical and hateful and about how corporate it all is, but, you know, that's pretty much what it was then, you know?
Yep.
It's just, you know, what's hot and how do we get in on it?
So it's...
And a songwriter like him and that guy he was working with, what was...
David Courtney.
Yeah. They knew how to sit down and say, let's write us one of those. You know, to look at what's at the top of the charts right now. Is this Elton John thing?
Let's do that. Yeah.
Oh, let's... Oh, what key is that in? Okay, well, we'll just move it down here and just, you know, change this. No problem. They knew what they were doing.
And you think, like, there were probably, like, hundreds of other guys like him and, you know, and David Courtney's...
Gilbert O'Sullivan.
Trying to do the same thing. Like, all right, I need a piano ballad. I need a...
Yeah.
You know, I need a country twang... funny song. I need a, you know, Who-esque song I could sell to Roger Daltrey,
and
you know?
Gilbert O'Sullivan could do Alone Again Naturally.
Right.
And
Roger Daltrey's doing a solo album. Let's see if I can sell him something. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds like something else. What the hell? The chorus.
I'm sure you're right. To me, this only sounds like this. I think I know this too well.
I don't really know this song.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I know this so well.
Well, maybe I heard it at the time. I just don't remember.
That surprises me because in addition to growing up with this, I'm pretty sure we listened to... This is one of those records that we listened to relentlessly at the newspaper office.
Lost 45 or something. Yeah.
Back in...
Or just somebody had the album.
Mark Mamagonian used to make...
mixes.
These 90-minute cassettes of all singles like this from this time, and we just listen to them over and over and over and over again.
Maybe I tuned it out.
My God, we listened to this, you know, ironically, 7 years after it was a hit, thinking of it as an old song.
Right.
How young were we?
Wow.
I'm exaggerating a little when I say seven. I don't know. Less than 10, though, I guess. Yeah, 10 years. Still 10.
Think, though, big whoop. In 87, Leo Sayer was like a distant memory. You know?
Yeah.
Which is hard to believe, but it's true. Like, he really flamed out.
Long enough go to laugh at.
Yeah.
That's what we were doing. Well, I mean, we're
Barry Scott.
Wise-ass little kids.
Barry Scott made his, you know, made his bones in the 80s with Lost 45s. They weren't, it's not like they were from, like, 30 years. Like, now they're 30 years, like 40 years ago. But
right.
Back then, it was, like, 10 years.
That's right.
The Lost 45s. And now, you know, now
it's
literally
be like
literally
playing
oldies.
Something from 2004.
Right, right.
2004, The Lost 45.
Which, you know, for our kids is like an eternity ago, but for us, this, it's like it just happened.
This archaeological find.
Right.
Here's the Strokes.
Jesus.
That's too old. I don't think that's
13 years, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure they had an album out in 2004 and nobody listened to.
Yeah, they were long gone, 2004.
Jesus. So that was almost, actually, that song was almost like kind of his earlier stuff. I mean, with the, had the disco strings, but he at least was singing a little more on it.
Uh-huh.
He wasn't trying to, like, you know, be a wuss on it. But... Is this Thunder in My Heart? Ooh, a little funk.
This one I don't really know. But I already like it.
Yeah, I like it better than the last couple.
Really?
Oh, maybe not. Wow, he's back to the falsetto.
That's his thing, man.
Yeah. I wonder at like what point he was like, I gotta sing in this way higher register to get a hit.
That'll work.
Yeah, it did.
Whoa. Is this a duet?
Oh, is this Easy to Love?
What the hell is this? Mm. I'll tell you.
He almost sounds like the guy in Supertramp.
Oh my god, you're right, it does.
No, the other guy, not Roger Hudson, the other dude.
This is Easy to Love.
This hit 36 on the charts in the U.S.
Is it a duet? Is that just him?
It could be, right?
That's
I mean, he's
crazy, yeah. Man.
That sounds like somebody else.
It
huh?
does.
Yeah. Love. It's from the album Thunder in the Heart. Thunder in My Heart. Written by Leo Sayer and Albert Hammond. Yeah, I'm looking on Discogs. They're not saying anybody else is on it. But.
Huh. It is a weird one, huh?
Mm. Funk soul. Well, I guess it
is him, yeah. I mean, it sounds like him.
I guess it's no coincidence that his career just totally tanked right as disco died. Because if you look at, you know, like Supertrain, we were talking about Supertrain earlier. No, Supertrain's full of disco sequence. You have a disco on the train, you know, it's all that thumpa thumpa thumpa. And probably like 6 months later, you know, disco was done, and so was Supertrain, and so was Leo Sayer.
Wow.
You know, I mean, he hitched his wagon to the disco Supertrain, and, you know, they went off a cliff together.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if people thought that this is just an evolving sound, and when you're done with it, you'd be able to move on to anything else. Did anybody anticipate?
Well, I mean, it's the Stones tried it out, and you know, they were like established enough that they could afford to do it, and then you know, do whatever the hell they wanted to.
They could afford
I mean, Rod Stewart did it.
They could afford to have nobody care about their records anymore. But did they really bounce back from it?
Yeah, I mean, Tattoo You was a big hit for them, and they didn't even really try to make it. It was like kind of a discards, right? But I mean, Start Me Up was big. You know, it was a bounce back. I mean, they definitely were in a lull there.
It's true.
But Rod Stewart, you know, he did the disco thing. I mean, I think a lot of people kind of jumped off of that.
Yes.
You know, bandwagon after that, but yeah. He's still a big artist, you know.
Yes.
I don't know if did Elton really go disco. He kind of did, right? The Kiki D thing, but that's sort of so. That's not really disco though. He didn't have the, he didn't do.
I don't
the
think
strings.
Of it is.
He didn't do the strings. He just
well,
did
he did do strings, except at the same time.
But not the
that
disco
seems
strings.
Like that was a yeah that was yeah. established. That's what they you know they call the Philadelphia sound. You know,
right,
Philadelphia.
He was
strings.
Doing soul. He was doing R&B.
TSOP, the sound of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Yep.
What the? I don't know. Yeah, we don't need to listen to this.
I don't think I can do this. Yeah, I would say from here on out, the pickings get a little slim.
Well, because... Oh, Can't Stop Loving You, Though I Try. This hit number 6 in the UK, but didn't chart in the US.
This sounds like something that could have been a big hit for somebody else. Some you know, this sounds like a girl song.
Yeah. theirs is a...
This was a big hit.
There's the single sleeve for that song.
Oh, man. You know, I didn't realize this is very country-ish. This is very...
Oh, yeah.
This is like legitimate country. Like, Long Tall Glasses was like funny country. This is like a real country song. This could be this could be a big hit today for somebody.
Yeah.
Like a, this could be like like a Taylor Swift song.
I hated this song, man.
Taylor Swift could have a huge hit with this.
Yeah. I'm surprised somebody hasn't covered it. Maybe somebody has. Who knows?
Yeah, it's pretty shitty, man. Oh, you know what? This song is a fucking McCartney song.
Yeah.
This is so McCartney-ish.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I think you'd have to tone down the whole country aspect of it. You'd have to, which is all in the, kind of in the drums. It's in a, there's a shuffle to the drums. You have to make it less Ringo-y. That's the irony of this, is the whole country aspect of this is how Ringo-y the drums are.
Ringo-y.
It's true. It's weird. Gosh, this sounds like a Wings song.
Yeah. I hated that.
Holy shit, I never noticed this.
McCartney-esque.
Yeah.
Esque of it. Yeah. It's kind of that shitty, I guess, what, mid-70s silly love songs, period McCartney.
It's not as good as that.
No.
I actually,
maybe that's what he's aping, though.
But yes, I agree, yeah.
Maybe this was like his, all right, I got to get out of this disco rut.
And the backing on this is Keith Olsen. This is Fleetwood Mac, the whole Rumors sound.
Yeah.
What year did when did this come out?
80.
This is just post Rumors.
Yeah. Post Tusk.
Yeah, well, it's, believe me, it's no Tusk, that's for sure, but...
No.
Oh, see, this is... Yeah, listen to the backing.
Yeah.
This is Paul McCartney meets Rumors. I'm off the country thing. I started out thinking this was country. It's not. It's Rumors.
Well, it's still very, you know, adult, contemporary.
No question. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you sound like Christy McVie.
Christy McVie, yeah. Wonder if it's her.
I don't think it is, but yeah. Well, yeah, it sounds like a Rumors outtake.
Oh, this is written by Sonny Curtis and Jerry Allison. Crickets. Came out in 1960.
No kidding.
They recorded it in 59, soon after Buddy Holly's death. Released it in 1960.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense, too. It has a lot of stuff going on.
Bobby
V
recorded it.
And you know what? That's the whole McCartney thing. That's where it goes in reverse, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Also has been covered by The Shadows and Sammy Kershaw, a country singer. Yeah, so Hong Kong-based actor Lawrence Ing-Wei Kok recorded a version of the song.
What are you? Did you start making noises?
Yes.
Oh.
Ing-Wei Kok.
This is Living in a Fantasy. Wasn't this the last single?
Oh,
is that what you said?
Yeah, I think so.
This was his last hit single. Oh no, is it Thunder in My Heart again?
Not in the US.
Oh, okay.
This was Living in the Fantasy, 1981. This was hit number 23 in the US.
Okay.
Did not hit the charts in the UK. That's weird.
Cause it's so good?
Yeah. Well, just weird that it like a UK guy who...
This also sounds really Rumors-y. This must be from the same LP.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Sounds like Christine McVie.
Yeah. It's got that kind of Laurel Canyon kind of thing going on too, right? Like, could have, like, you know, Carly Simon on background vocals. Then he started doing like covers in the mid-80s.
That's never a good sign.
No. The Thunder in My Heart thing,
storms up ahead.
The Thunder in My Heart thing became a hit in 2006. It was Thunder in My Heart Again by somebody called Mech in Australia, featuring Leo Sayer.
Figures.
So it was like a, I don't know if it was a remix or a remake, but apparently he moved to Australia in the 2000s and he's now a citizen.
To find himself.
Sure. He's in the, he went on a walkabout.
Yeah.
Was eaten by a dingo.
You know, one of the best things is years ago, Karen, my wife, found this recipe for what's called the Anzac biscuit, Anzac cookie. Anzac is A-N-Z-A-C, Austria, New Zealand Air Corps.
Oh, and that's what they would eat. It had all the nutrients or some crap like that in a cookie. Yeah.
It's like the official cookie of the... Yeah, it's like a military cookie.
Yeah.
It's insanely good.
Tastes good?
Yeah,
it's good. And it's packed with like... But it's supposed to be like... I don't know if you told me about this or somewhere I heard about this, but like...
Wasn't me.
It's like packed with all the... You know, it basically was like everything they needed to eat.
That's interesting. I think. It's interesting. I didn't know that, but now that you tell me that, that kind of makes sense, because it's like it's completely a confection, but right. Now that you say that, I'm realizing it very much has the consistency like of almost like our granola bar.
Yeah.
Except, believe me, it doesn't feel healthy at all. It's super good.
Yeah. I think that's what it was. I remember hearing about that. Between More Than I Can Say and Living in a Fantasy, he had three singles released in 1980, Once in a While, Shake the Hand, and Taking the Brakes Off. It didn't chart anywhere.
Oh, man.
So that's a big, you know, whiff factor there. Oh, yeah, this is totally, like, kind of studio, session-y. Yeah.
Shitwood Mac.
Yeah. Sheetwood. Man, it's terrible. But you could see them, like, you know, plugging in any number of vocalists on this song, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like he cut this himself.
Like Waddy Wachtel like playing
piano,
the guitar solo.
And then left.
Yeah.
And he's, yeah, we'll play it for you in 3 weeks.
Waddy Wachtel, you play the solo. Lee Sklar, you play the bass. You know, they get all these freaking studio
basically
dudes.
Basically like the Eagles. It's like the Eagles, the Burrito Brothers.
Yeah. Jim Keltner, you're on drums.
Yeah, that sucked.
No, it's awful. So, yeah, that kind of, you know, I guess it's no mystery why he kind of fell from prominence.
I don't know. I mean, I gave up a long time ago trying to understand what people like. And for all I know, that could have been a huge hit.
Well, I mean, obviously, like, I think like we said, if he had...
This sounds more like Christine McVie.
Yeah. Maybe he was, like, having a sex change or something.
If you told me this was a Rumours outtake, I would
believe
you.
I mean, he always kind of sang, you know, those disco songs are all, like, very kind of high register, girly sounding. But
so funny.
You know, I think he just was so tied. He's so associated with disco and kind of music that went out of fashion that anything else he tried after that, except for that More Than I Can Say, but even that wasn't even his song.
Right.
But...
Right.
You know. I think after that, he just kind of...
This sounds like the end titles song. An animated movie. Oh. Like some princess movie.
I was thinking of... you remember the movie Foul Play? Chevy Chase.
That's
and
true.
Hawn,
yes,
with,
yes.
With the Manilow.
Sure.
It had Manilow songs. Like,
yes.
All through it, but like...
Oh, God. No.
Yeah,
I can't
bad.
Do it. I can't
what
do it.
What song was that?
It was called that. I like the bass on that.
Was that Heart Stop Beating in Time? Was
that's
that
what this is.
Oh, okay.
The one that I just jettisoned was Have You Ever Been in Love?
That was number 10. That was the one I was talking about that won the award for best song musically and lyrically in England.
Makes sense.
This hit number 22 in the UK.
This is Heart Stop Beating in Time.
Yeah, he had a few more hits in the UK, but not... Like, the next one was 16. This one, next one was after that was 51.
Orchard Road?
Yeah. Orchard Road hit number 16.
Here's Orchard Road.
This is 1983.
19... When?
83.
Oh. Oh, my God.
It's almost like a...
I'd be ashamed of it.
Like a whiter shade of pale kind of thing.
Oh, I mean, it just sounds like you recorded it at a Radio Shack.
Well, yeah, that too.
On the demo keyboard next to the telephones.
This was on his album. Music composed by Alan Tarney with lyrics by Leo Sayer.
Oh, jeez.
According to Sayer, the lyrics on the song are based on an all-night phone conversation out in a public telephone booth he had with his then-wife, pleading for her return from her flat and forgiveness after a lapse of judgment in their 7-year marital life. Song title is a made-up road name.
Ugh. This is unlistenable. Here's something called Everyone. You got any numbers on that?
Hold on. Everyone?
Let's see, maybe I'm not reading it right. Hold on. No, it's called Everyone.
Yeah, I don't even see that.
I think maybe we found a lost recording. It's called Everyone. The lost Leo Sayer tapes. Here's Everyone.
Talk up the post, Rick.
And now, the lost Leo Sayer tapes from 1986. This is Everyone. Fuck. Four more bars.
Extra bar, yeah.
And now, sit back and enjoy.
This
Everyone
is Everyone.
Nice, you did it. That nailed it.
Ugh. Everyone thinks this sucks.
sounds like he's going for a subterranean. He wants to do a subterranean homesick blues end of the world as we know it. Except he didn't want to write 50% of the lyrics, and so he's resting between bars.
This is his rock song.
Whew. This could work live. This could work live if you really hit it.
Yeah. Got some guitar on it.
You know who could pull this off? Beck.
Yeah?
This is like a Beck song, yeah. This is the sort of shit Beck does now.
Yeah.
Beck's
it's symphonic.
Beck's
kinda.
Beck's kinda cold. You know? This is a lot like what Beck does now.
Like Beck basically from until like a sea change. What after sea change? He kind of just, you know. But he had like 4 or 5 like spectacular albums in a row. And I don't know if it's like
I'd say counting sea change.
Yeah, no,
that's when he went downhill.
Yeah, I really like that album.
Oh yeah, I don't. Yeah,
but
sea change is the first one where I felt like it's just really hard to connect with. It just seems really cold.
But now it seems like he's kind of trying to recreate different things, you know, like each album, like this latest one kind of sounds like Sea Change 2.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, he's kind of going through different phases, but he's not doing it. This is like him trying to, like, reestablish himself as a rock artist, maybe?
He just seems to try. Leo
Sayer?
Yeah.
But, no, Beck, yeah, Beck's kind of bumming
me out. He just seems to try too hard. He just seems like he makes Phil Collins records or something.
Yeah.
It just all sounds really big and dry and cold. And
yes, I don't even know what the hell this song is. It's not awful.
This one?
Yeah.
I like this one more than anything else we've heard.
Yeah.
In the last 6 or 7 songs.
Yeah.
I think I like it because it sounds like Beck.
I think I like it because it doesn't sound like Leo Sayer.
I only have one more. It's called Thunder in My Heart Again.
Yeah, that's the remake or whatever.
Remake?
That, remember that thing that Australian thing I was talking about? That,
yeah.
That's what that is. So somebody else like did it. Yeah, Mech. Oh, it's a remix.
Oh, right.
It's a remix of Thunder in My Heart. Oh, he hit number one on the UK singles chart with it.
Well, then we'll hear it.
Then he released an album in 2008 where he rearranged all his songs from his catalog with jazz instrumentation.
Oh, boy. Jay, you want to dance?
I'm dancing already.
Do you want to get married in this state? I think it's legal.
It sure is. Jesus.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much longer I'm going to make it on this one. Oh, Jesus.
Okay, that's the part where I recognize.
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, so
that's all I got.
Then, in the '80s, he was doing soundtrack stuff. He was the voice of Dan the Forest Ranger in the Raccoons on Ice, some Canadian animated series.
You're making that up.
I am not.
He did three songs in All This in World War II.
Right.
He did. So yeah, I forget which ones, but I don't know. That's a famously. I mean, that's almost unwatchable.
He did I Am the Walrus, Let It Be, and The Long and Winding Road.
Thank you.
What the hell is that movie?
It's almost unwatchable. It's this bizarre movie where people cover Beatles songs and you watch strange footage. it's kind of a stoner movie.
Listen to this. The film starred the Army of the Third Reich,
yep.
Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, Milton Berle, Humphrey Bogart, Richard Burton,
yes.
Neville Chamberlain, Adolf Hitler, Bob Hope.
What the fuck? We can watch it right now if you'd like. Yeah. I have it.
The reviewer in New York Daily News wrote that the film's PG rating had to have stood for positively ghastly. It appeared out of competition at Cannes in 1977. It's occasionally been shown at film festivals and even on American cable TV. Yeah.
It's...
Soundtrack album.
It's really challenging.
Wow. Original intention of the filmmakers was to use actual Beatles music in the film. They decided to use other artists covering them because they realized additional money could be made through a soundtrack album. Oh, that was the one where Elton John did Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Yes.
Rod Stewart did Get Back. Ambrosia covered Magical Mystery Tour.
Duh.
And that became a hit?
I mean,
and the
Bee Gees. Who would you get to do Magical Mystery Tour?
Ambrosia. Bee Gees were on that. Brian Ferry. Keith Moon did When I'm 64. Wow. David Essex.
Which, of course, ended up not being an issue.
Yeah. He got halfway there. Jeff Lynne. Duh. I don't know who Lindsay DePaul is. Richard Colciante. The Four Seasons. Oh, boy. Helen Reddy did The Fool on the Hill. Brothers Johnson did Hey Jude. That probably was all
Thank
right.
Thank goodness. Yeah, actually, that's terrific.
Peter Gabriel did Strawberry
That's
Fields
on one of their regular records. You can...
Status Quo did Getting Better. Tina Turner did Come Together. Huh. Yeah, I've heard some of those songs. I wasn't aware of the movie.
You're lucky.
Yeah, sounds like it. It was a documentary. It says it's a 1976 musical documentary that juxtaposes Beatles songs with World War II newsreel footage and 20th Century Fox films from the 40s. What the? It lasted 2 weeks in cinemas and was quickly sent into storage. Jesus, that's terrible.
If you consider people running for the exits, storage.
Jeez, I don't even remember hearing about this when it came out. Like, I was cognizant of movies back then.
You'd heard of movies.
I'd heard of these things called movies. Occasionally attended them. What the fuck? Leo Sayer basically went from, this huge pop star for a couple of years and then, just showing up in Canadian animated series in the, like 10 years later.
And I wonder how much money he made as a pop star, and you know, if like he was okay, you know.
Well, yeah, you know, I guess he did some. I mean, he didn't have a lot of. I was thinking like royalty money from songwriting.
Didn't he write his songs?
Yeah, so maybe that. I don't know. Some of them.
He co-wrote a lot of the big hits.
Like When I Need You was like Carol Bayer Sager, and Albert Hammond, and so was. So I think some of his big hits maybe not. So
and
much.
Well, one of his big hits there was a Crickets tune.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So some of his big hits he didn't write.
You make me. I think he wrote "You Make Me Feel Like Dancing." Let's see.
Okay.
Vinnie Poncia and Leo Sayer.
Vinnie Poncia, that's funny. Which one did Vinnie Poncia co-write?
"You Make Me Feel Like Dancing."
Oh my god.
I wanna dance the night away. Moonlighting.
That's so funny.
Al Jarreau. Oh boy. Yeah, so I mean, he wrote a bunch of his songs, but I think the big hits.
Yeah.
Only one of them, but. So yeah, Leo Sayer. I guess the kind of guy who started off doing his own thing, realized there was no money in it, and then kind of figured out how to make some money by doing other things that people seem to like.
You think?
For a little while.
Yeah.
Seems like it, right? I mean, he definitely was, you know, you look at the different styles that he did over his career, and they varied widely.
Yeah.
You know, and then by the end there, his last gasp, he was doing what Fleetwood Mac kind of McCartney stuff.
I mean, I think in a way that's professional, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't know that
it's not unique to Leo Sayer.
I think there are people who go through phases because they're searching for success, and then there are people who go through phases because that's what a professional pop star. And you know, singer songwriter does, and that's what success is made of. You know,
yeah. I mean, you know, look at like
that's the job.
Like Hall and Oates started off doing
that's
like
a great example,
Philly soul kind of stuff, and then you know, figured out how to hey, let's do some of this pop stuff, and they you know they had
and as you know, Broadway Danny Rose, Woody Allen says, you know, you'll always make a beautiful dollar in this business.
Yeah,
you know, I think there's a period of time where he made a. I'm guessing.
At least a couple of years, yeah.
He may have made a beautiful dollar in this business.
If he was smart with his money, you know. And now he's got greatest hits albums and shit.
I think he may have, for a little while there, rode waves rather than, you know, well, what else should I do? What else should I don't know that it was in desperation. I think it felt like, not so much leading, of course, but I think he followed lucratively.
Yeah, and then... Maybe he just realized by the 80s that it wasn't happening.
You're done.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it does look like he was a cartoon voice.
Yeah.
And you default to cartoon.
Then there's that. That's a career.
I remember once seeing... I was watching... I think I was watching American Bandstand. It was the... I was watching American Bandstand to see... the Beastie Boys on. Mm-hmm. This was, you know, whatever, in the mid-80s or whatever.
Right.
And the cartoon show was ending. And it was like, not the Smurfs, but, you know, one of those kind of horrible 80s cartoons. And I saw at the end, in the end titles, that the musical director was Alan O'Day.
Mm-hmm.
Was the musical director of this cartoon series. And I knew the name right away. Alan O'Day... had a single when we were kids with Undercover Angel. You remember?
Oh, yeah.
Remember Undercover Angel? So, you know, you have your single, some bubblegum thing, and then, you know, you're a musical director for some dumb 80s cartoon series.
Beats digging ditches.
Exactly. Music.
Which he probably did as well. Well... I think we've said all we need to say about Leo Sayer.
Oh,
and probably some more.
Maybe a half an hour ago.
Yeah. Rick Doobie, thanks so much
for helping me
out with this. This is great.
You are listening to Completely Conspicuous with Jay Kumar.
That was the Fresh and Onlys with Fascinated and the OCs with I Was Denied. And now let's close things out with a song that was in the Billboard Top 100 in 1980 at the same time as Leo Sayer's More Than I Can Say. That was Rockpile with Teacher Teacher from the album Seconds of Pleasure. That song was on the charts in the late 1980, early 1981, while Leo Sayer's More Than I Can Say was camped out at number 2 on that chart. And that wraps up episode 351 of Completely Conspicuous. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you'll join me next time. In the meantime, check out BFF.fm every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 Pacific, to hear my radio show Stuck in the Garage. You can check out Mixcloud.com/CoomDog to listen to archive shows. The Menace Beach song is on the album Rat World on Memphis Industries. You can download it for free at KEXP. The song from the OCs is on the album Warm Slime on In the Red. You can download that song for free at Epitonic. And the Fresh and Only song is on the album Play It Strange, also on In the Red. And you can download that one for free as well at Epitonic. Jay Breitling produced the opening and closing themes of the show. Voiceover work is courtesy of James Grelian. Completely Conspicuous is a Tan God production, not a Dan God production, damn it.